Hello, and welcome to Community Focus, KCBC's weekly public affairs program that covers the issues that matter to you and your community. I'm your host, John Yazel, and I'll be here every week at the same time on KCBC to speak with the experts and people who know about the issues and events that make a difference in our lives. And I thank you for joining me. If you have a question or comment for me, or would like to hear a topic covered on the show, you can always contact me via email at communityfocus@crawfordbroadcasting.com. That's communityfocus@crawfordbroadcasting.com. Or you can also go online to 770kcbc.com and click on the Community Focus link at the top of the page. And if you stay with me, I'll give you the mailing address at the end of the show. Community Focus starts now on KCBC. Well, it was nearly a year ago, a very notable disastrous oil train derailment happened in Quebec, Canada, and 47 people died from the explosion. The town of Lac-Mégantic was also devastated. But these derailments are continuing to happen around the United States and going mostly unnoticed and unreported by the media. Now, these trains are hauling highly volatile oil through towns and cities across the country and California with little oversight and little regulation. In as early as 2008, some 9,000 rail cars were reported to be carrying oil across the country, while today the number is closer to 500,000 of these oil rail cars traveling across the country. Now, cities across California are starting to take notice and want to try to impose tougher regulations on an industry that seems to be going pretty much unchecked. Now, Benicia is at the crossroads of this battle, and today we're going to talk with Marilyn Bardet of the Benicias for a Safe and Healthy Community and SafeBenicia.org to discuss what citizens can do to help make our state safe. Marilyn, thanks for coming on Community Focus today.
You're welcome. I'm delighted to be with you on this show.
Now, over the next half hour, we're going to talk about what it is your group is trying to do, the dangers of this oil and some of the ways that it's actually, you know, extracted from the earth and the ways that even that can be dangerous for the country and the environment as a whole. The rail infrastructure seems to be a big part of this and why it's not safe, what the town of Benicia is doing to try to kind of slow down the expansion of the Valero plant that's in Benicia. And if we have time in a half hour, it's going to be a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about some of these plant expansions that's going around the Bay Area. Now, before we get into everything, why don't you tell us a little bit about your group, Benicians for a Safe and Healthy Community, and what it is your organization is doing.
Yes. Well, to back up a bit, I have been involved as a refinery watchdog for many years. Since the year 2000 when Valero purchased the refinery in Benicia from ExxonMobil. And we organized a group then called the Good Neighbor Steering Committee to basically serve as a community overseer of activities at the refinery. We were very concerned about community safety and community health in general. And Valero, the refinery, began a project, a decades-long project, to upgrade their refinery to handle a greater variety of sour crudes, meaning more acidic crudes, heavier crudes, etc., a good deal of which was coming from by pipeline from the Central Valley in California. Later on, they made some more adjustments to the refinery, and it was only in the last few years that we began to learn about the great, what I call the Klondike Rush to North Dakota and the tar sands in Canada, for what Valero refers to now as North American-sourced crudes. And these crudes are considered to be price advantage to refiners because the major oil industries that are invested in these mining operations have promoted through their lobbyists, et cetera, heavy discounts to encourage the distribution of these oils. And these oils are unconventional in the sense of how they're extracted. And then they're both, from the tar sands or Bakken, hugely carbon-intensive oils when you're thinking of their impact on the global environment with respect to climate. They require huge amounts of water and natural gas and other chemicals to extract by hydraulic fracturing of shale formations in the Dakotas and elsewhere in the Midwest. And in the tar sands, that's an enormous project covering a network of mines covering approximately 125,000 square miles that in a boreal forest that has been largely corrupted and disrupted and destroyed in this vast area of Alberta, affecting the watersheds of three major rivers that flow to the Arctic. So I take in perspective when I think of what may be coming into my town by rail to give Valero the price advantage of getting at these domestic crude sources. I have to weigh what we mean by a project that extends all the way back to Alberta tar sands and the Dakotas, affecting the environment, the global atmosphere, and then community safety,
right,
wherever these rails go through, you know, where these trains will travel through. And I might add that there are only three entrances into California by rail because of our mountain chain. We have the Feather River Canyon, Donner Summit, and up by Shasta through the town of Dunsmuir. And these routes, Union Pacific routes and BNSF train routes, are go through, you know, mountain gorges, dangerous, treacherous areas that if you had a spill there or a derailment, you could cause fire and explosions, et cetera, as we've seen from Lake Megantic, what can happen. I compare the kind of fireball that we saw in videos of the Lake Megantic disaster to a bombing in Europe during World War II. I mean, the size of the fireball is extraordinary.
Yeah, it was devastating to watch and see all those pictures that were up there.
Yeah.
But then the story went away rather quickly, which was part of the thing that raised eyebrows to me, was that these types of disasters are happening in the United States as well, with spills and tanker derailments,
yes,
that are exploding, but you don't see a lot of talk about this, and that's why this is alarming, I'm sure, to your group,
yes,
and most of the citizens of California.
Well, what we've done, a number of us seasoned activists in January of this year, having addressed the initial environmental review of Valero's proposal to bring in, and I might say here what this project entails, is bringing in what they say will be two trains a day, two 50-car trains a day, carrying 70,000 barrels of oil total each day into the refinery for processing.
Wow.
And they won't tell us which oils are coming in, but we're pretty sure from public statements they've made that it will be both or either or tar sands and Bakken crude from North Dakota, which they're really aiming at now.
Mm.
And so we feel that we had to get organized. And so we started a new group called the Benicians for Safe and Healthy Community. And we have been hard at work, really, for almost a year and a half now. And we are seeing it as a challenge both through the environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act, our privilege to review a development project of this magnitude, and also a political challenge, because we have to consider that the final vote on this project will be made probably on appeal by the city council. And of course, Valero has made it clear that our tax base is, as they see it, largely dependent on Valero's existence here. They have threatened that they would leave if this project isn't approved, and that is said quietly behind the scenes, but we've all heard it. And so it's an enormous challenge to our community, because we already have a refinery that poses risk to this community every day.
Right.
But when you talk about adding trains coming in twice a day, basically, they make promises about when the trains would arrive, et cetera, but all of that is just promises and requests to Union Pacific, but federal law governs all rail movements and rail activity, and the U.S. Department of Transportation confers authority on railroad companies like Union Pacific or BNSF to regulate their schedules, do maintenance, determine the composition of trains, etc. So they're, you know, a local community and state agencies, counties, et cetera, have hardly any means except to participate in sending off their alarms to the federal government, to the DOT, to do something about rail safety, you know, since this appears to be a huge push by the industry to bring this stuff by rail into California, as well as other parts of the country.
Right. Now, when you were mentioning that Valero said that they were going to possibly leave That's not realistic. They have a huge plan in Benicia.
No.
Where are they going to be able to build another refinery with EPA standards the way they are, or somewhere else in the United States that's on a seaport, which is really kind of the bottom line if I did my research right? It kind of sounds to me like they want to expand for exportation, not necessarily, you know, just refining this oil for use in the United States. And that's something
correct.
That we might want to make note of, that when you hear these arguments, and from what the research that I did on this subject, it seems to me like a lot of these refineries, and there are others that want to expand as well, including the Richmond Chevron plant, the Phillips 66 plant in Santa Maria, mm-hmm. and others, they want to expand their refineries for export, not necessarily for local use. So this isn't going to mean that when we go to the gas pump, because they're refining all this fuel, that's going to mean cheaper prices for us at the gas pump. They want to send this stuff to other countries like China and Japan and everywhere else that needs all this fuel. I mean, it just look at what's going on with natural gas right now. They're exporting so much natural gas. We're not seeing any decrease in the price of natural gas in the United States with all the fracking that's going on. And this subject could take up three or four shows, but obviously we don't have that much time. Let's talk about the real difference here, Marilyn, and if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Marilyn Bardet with the Benicians for a Safe and Healthy Community. People listening today might not understand what the real difference is between the oil from the 1950s and the oil that's being transported in these cars today. What makes it so dangerous?
Well, conventional oils from all over the world, actually, that is what has usually been brought in to, say, the Valero Benicia refinery or Exxon back when. We had oils coming from all over the world, and the Valero Benicia refinery actually was built and expanded in 1968 to primarily process Prudhoe Bay crude, a light sweet crude that was fairly easy to get at. When we talk about conventional oils, it's like they could stick a long straw in the ground mm-hmm. at one time, especially in the early days before 1970. And draw up oil out of the ground that just, you know, came up easily, and that's what you saw in Texas, et cetera, in the early days of oil.
Right, in Southern California, right.
Yes, but what's happened is those sources are peaking. That is, for what it takes to get out now, they cannot make, for the demand that has around the world for oil in China and India and and developing countries that are anxious to develop their industrial bases, et cetera. The demand has increased, but with conventional oils, you can't replace the amount of oil that's demanded every day by new finds, new reserves. Mm-hmm. They're not being found, at least not ones that are easy to access. They've tried, I mean, Shell Oil tried up in the Arctic and had one of its rigs float off and be smashed by ice floes and realized, this is maybe not so easy. And we saw what happened with the Macondo disaster in the Gulf with BP in 2011, or mm-hmm. I can't remember the date. But it's been harder and harder for the big majors to extract at a price they can afford and that the country can afford, meaning price per barrel, which affects the economy at large. It's been very hard for them to provide at a price break that they want more conventional oil. So they've gone after a new source, which is, it's been known for a long while that it would be possible, but they didn't have the technology that would allow them to extract oil from rock formations, shale formations in the Midwest and other locations, like in the Marcellus Shale in New York, a highly contested area, mm-hmm. as far as whether people in New York want this fracking to happen there, and including there has been consideration for a shale formation in California, down around Kern County and the Central Valley.
Right, the Monterey Shale, is that what they
Monterey
call it?
Monterey Shale, right. Yes. But for various reasons, these areas are difficult to extract the oil from, and the processor demand an enormous amount of water and other chemicals to basically float the oil out of the rock. And then you have the problem of all of the wastewater that comes up that may be contaminated with chemicals that they've used, and not only that, radon, radioactive material that's naturally found in the soils or the earth layers way below. And the problem now is that these oils that they get, and I'm speaking now about North Dakota's Bakken from the Bakken Shale formations, this oil apparently has characteristics that make it like a natural gasoline. It comes up with a huge amount of what they call light ends, like pentane, methane, benzene, etc., that are highly volatile gases. And this oil tends to evaporate easily, meaning it has a low
threshold, maybe?
Yeah, is that boiling a good word? Point. Means the gases can boil off easily, and especially under pressure in tank cars, they have found, these rail cars, when you put in the traditional conventional rail cars that we call the DOT 111s that have been discussed by the federal government now because we've seen so many accidents with them, these catastrophic derailments involving Bakken oil that explodes when the rail cars are punctured in a derailment, and then you'll see these fireballs. So Bakken crude behaves like gasoline. Workers in North Dakota have characterized Bakken as looking like Miller Lite when poured in the glass. So you kind of get the feeling that this is not a typical oil.
Hmm.
It's called very light, very sweet. And by comparison, tar sands is a very heavy crude oil that is actually developed from a naturally occurring substance called bitumen that has been known about in Canada for years and years and years. Even the Indians used to use it to seal their canoes. Bitumen is as thick as tar and is found under the boreal forest in Alberta and in these clay and sand layers. And the only way you can get it out is to, they've developed the technology to do this. They pump huge amounts of water that has to be heated by natural gas, so you're using up any a valuable energy source there, and they have to melt it out of the ground and bring it up. And it is considered the largest mega industrial project in the world, development project. It's a network of mines, and this bitumen has to be then trucked to upgrader facilities outside of Edmonton and elsewhere to actually make it more liquid by adding other petroleum liquids, partly refined, and so that the bitumen could flow into rail cars or through pipelines, because otherwise the stuff is so thick that you would have to have heated rail cars and heated rail offloading terminals and storage tanks to keep it from just thickening, being so thick you can't move it. So it's a hugely energy-intensive mining operation in Canada. The government has heavily discounted the oil. Dick Cheney basically, back in 2005, blessed the Canadian tar sands as being the source of American future oil independence. And this was shocking to me back in 2005 when I heard that. And so I was very dubious about these claims. The main thing is these oil companies are international, and so they can sell their products, especially the majors, like Shell, BP, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil. They could take this oil out of the tar sands products and Bakken and sell it anywhere in the world,
right,
where they got a good price. And so we become, for instance, Valero, which is only a refiner, and the largest refiner in the world, they don't have their own oil fields. They already are prepared to supply their refineries in the southeast, or in Texas and the Gulf, with tar sands coming through the country through various terminals and transported by rail, what they call diluted bitumen, so it's dilbits, as they call it. They would bring these synthetic crudes down to the Gulf, and some of it would be refined in America and at Valero refineries, but some of it might be sold overseas. This is a huge bonanza, and Valero is doing very well economically. They claim in California it's a different problem. That's a long story, because there are different kinds of regulations here to produce cleaner-burning fuels, called CARB gas, mm-hmm. California Air Resources Board gas. And so they, when they threatened that they would leave, it's because there are more difficult and stringent regulations here in California than anywhere else in the country. But California also has the problem that it is locked in by the Sierra mountain chain. And so the only way to get these domestic sourced oils into California is by rail at this point. However, the Canadian government is pushing to get pipelines out to the coast in British Columbia and through the state of Washington. The U.S. government would like to see terminals there, or I should say the oil majors, so that they can bring some of these oils down by ship or marine vessel into California by other means, by that means. So giving them different options for transporting.
Right, and that's a long way out from happening because they would have to build these infrastructures in the first place. So now we're just left with transporting all this oil by rail because that's really the only feasible mean for them to do it. So
right, and it's flexible. That is, they can change their mind about a route. They can make scheduling changes quickly, and it doesn't require that they build a whole new infrastructure of pipelines. That's absolutely correct. But what I'm reading from Richard Heinberg from the Post-Carbon Institute, who has spent years researching the oil industry and the economics of oil, it's very likely that the shale plays in North Dakota and elsewhere will suffer the same kind of peaking as conventional oils. So we might see up to a decade worth of this boom cycle, but it will fall off too because the cost of extraction is so vulnerable to fluctuation in the markets. And Richard Heinberg claims that if the price of oil goes much beyond $100 a barrel, the American economy suffers. And you see, you know, you can imagine, we've seen this between 2009 and 2012, and we're still trying to climb out of that recession, big recession. And that was partly, people talk about the housing crisis in that time and the mortgages and all that affected us through the banking, deregulated banking. But actually, if you looked at the energy situation, there was also a huge correlation between the price of oil at that time and the what we could call a Great Recession. And if you track the recessions we've had, they are very in the past, historically, you could say that there is a strong correlation between recessions and the price per barrel of oil. And I believe we're in desperate times with the oil industry. That is, that things are changing rapidly for them. And we're hoping, of course, the vision is that they can transform themselves and invest in alternative energy like solar, wind, and thermal, as has done, for instance, Denmark. We've learned that Denmark gets 65% of its electricity from solar, wind, and thermal, and they have no gap in energy flow from those sources. And if we were to take the amount of money that's been invested in fossil fuel development and transform that into investment for alternative energy that's renewable, we could power this country. Our electric supply could be powered by this country. And there's researchers, for instance, Mark Jacobson at Stanford University, who has been, actually, he's got plans for New York, the state of California, and Washington to do just that, to prove that we can supply our energy needs for electricity from renewable sources 100% by 2050.
Yeah, and we hope that is something that we can get to. Marilyn had a lot more to say, so a normal one-show interview is not going to happen this time, so we're going to cut this off here and pick up the conversation next week on Community Focus as we focus more on the safety of the rail infrastructure in California when it comes to transporting this oil by train and what the city of Benicia is trying to do to hopefully mitigate some of the dangers that could come if the Valero refinery expansion is approved. So tune in next week on Community Focus to hear part two of this interview with Marilyn. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you'd like to contact me, you can do so via email, right? CommunityFocus@CrawfordBroadcasting.com. Again, that's CommunityFocus@CrawfordBroadcasting.com. Or if you want to use the regular U.S. mail, you can write Community Focus, care of KCBC, 10948 Cleveland Avenue, Oakdale, California, 95361. And you can also find all that contact information online at 770kcbc.com. Just click that Community Focus link. You've been listening to Community Focus here on KCBC. I'm your host, John Yazel. I appreciate you tuning in, and I will talk to you next week. God bless.